Hey, Dolphins fans, this is Mike Gesicki. Catch the new podcast, The Fin Addicts and The Sure Thing. You can find them on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And make sure to subscribe to The Fin Addicts Network on YouTube as well. Fin's up.
It's time for the Fin Addicts Miami Dolphins podcast on the Fin Addicts Network.
It's the new anthem for the new era. Fin's up.
Throw them fins up. Throw them fins up. Bitch, throw them fins up. Throw them fins up. Bitch, throw them fins up. Throw them fins up. Bitch,
it's the new era and we back up in the mix.
Throw them fins up. Throw them fins up. Bitch, throw them fins up. Throw them fins up.
Welcome to the Fin Addicts Miami Dolphin podcast. I'm Brian Byrne, joined always by Savak and our host Jason Sarney. We have a very special guest today. Before we get to that, though, let me do a little housekeeping. Make sure you subscribe to the Fin Addicts Miami Dolphins podcast. Leave us a review. You can find us, you know, wherever you can find podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Also, you can check us out on YouTube. We have our own unique YouTube URL. It's youtube.com/C/FinAddictsNetwork. Please follow us on Twitter at @Fin_Addicts. We also have a Fin Addicts Network hotline. It's 786-309-7558. It goes right to voicemail. You can leave us a voicemail, leave us a text. We want to hear from you. Ask our guests some questions. Leave us some feedback, make fun of Savak's hair. If you have any jokes for me for the dad joke of the day, anything you want to do, or you're just mad at the Miami Dolphins or happy at the Miami Dolphins, you know, leave us your take. Savak, how are we doing today?
Not too bad. Still recovering from my combat with the Wasps yesterday and avoiding getting a haircut.
Did you win? Did you beat the Wasps, or did they get the best of you?
Oh yeah, I took them down. Finished.
Nice. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to our fearless leader, our host, Jason Sarney. Take it away, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brian. Thank you so much. This is a great, exciting night for all of us, and we have a very special guest. We have an award-winning writer from the Sun Sentinel, author of several books, including two 1972 Miami Dolphin books that you would absolutely love. Still Perfect, The Untold Story of the 1972 Miami Dolphins, and Perfection, The Inside Story of that 1972 Miami Dolphins perfect season. And now, without further ado, it is our honor to introduce Miami Dolphins columnist, Dave Hyde. How you doing, Dave?
I'm great. Thanks for having me here tonight. It's good to be
with you. It's our pleasure.
Like I was saying, your guys' studios are much better than mine. I'm trying to do it on the fly here, so if everything falls behind me, it'll just be because I'm trying to keep up with you guys.
Like a terrific no-huddle offense, you improvised, you threw up the book in the background. So a seasoned pro, as we all know that you are, and many appreciations, of course, from all of us for joining us. So obviously, we're full swing, kind of, into training camp these days. And are you getting ready for a full, hopeful season of football?
Yeah, I don't know whether to get excited about it or get weary about it of what's going to happen. So it's hard to imagine, though. Normally, in a normal world, we'd be through one preseason game, going into the second one, and then, you know, it'd be a it's just hard to imagine. Here we are in mid-August, and I haven't even been to a Dolphin practice, and this is the first time in 3 decades, probably, something like that's happened. So it's a real we're all going through it, so we will all get through it too, but it's just a little odd. Here we are in mid-August and football's about to start.
You're absolutely right, and you've been to a couple of practices in your day. You've been down in Miami as a reporter in 1985. You came down, you know, you were with the Miami Herald, and, you know, obviously switched on over to the Sun Sentinel. You've done both writing as a beat writer, a columnist. And, you know, if you could just take us through how you became a Dolphin writer and really as someone who, you know, loves the journalism aspect of everything in sports, you know, what's your story from a writer's standpoint?
God, I just love to hear somebody who loves the journalism aspect of it. And so, I had two loves growing up, sports and writing. And, you know, it's through a series of, I studied economics and history in college. I got a job interview in Rochester, New York with the Times Union and went up there for the interview and was given a trial as a high school softball game to cover. And I went and covered it and I came back and I thought I wrote a pretty good story. And the editor called me over and said, "This is a pretty good story. Just one problem, you misspelled the name of the star player throughout the story." So that's why I didn't start in Rochester, New York. I started in Iowa City, Iowa. And it was actually a great job for me. And from Iowa City, covering the University of Iowa football and basketball for a year and a half, I then went to the Herald. And then through, you know, it was a great staff at the Herald. They, so many people went on to, there were eight sports editors on the staff, people who went on to become sports editors at other papers. So that's the talent I was working around. And through that, went to the Sun Sentinel in 1990 for all the obvious reasons. I always wanted to be a columnist. Now I had the freedom to really cover most national events and all local events and international sometimes. So it's been a great run. But really, if there's any disappointment for me, it's the same as a Dolphin fan, and in a different sense, though. You know, the fun times, the exciting times were at the start when the 85 to, you know, the early 90s, when the Dolphins were winning, they were exciting. They were a national team. Teams are a lot fun to cover, a lot fun to be around because people want to read your stories, and there are a lot more stories there when teams are winning. The real disappointment the last couple of decades is I'm meeting good people when the elevator is going down on their careers, you know, coaches, players, and that's, you know, so if anybody's understands the value of winning, you're looking at it right here.
To interject really quick, Savak was going to ask you a question, but Jason and I both went to the University of Buffalo. Being that you were in Rochester, I have to know, did you get a famous garbage plate?
You stole my question.
That doesn't stand out to me. You know, in my mind, now we're going back a few years here. In my mind, all I remember is I misspelled the lead player throughout, and through that, I didn't get the job. So I did not.
Otherwise, you're still a healthy man.
I never tried one of those garbage plates. I was going to say, did you go to like a Nick Tahoe's or whatever that place was? But good question, Brian. Great minds think alike.
The other time I was in Rochester, why was I in Rochester, though?
That's always a good question.
The University of Miami played a game Saturday, and the Dolphins were playing Sunday in Buffalo. And I had to drive from Rochester to Buffalo, and it was a whiteout. I mean, and I was driving about five riders and crammed into a car, and most of them hadn't been in snow before. I grew up in Ohio, so I've been in snow, but that was scary. That's my only other memory of Rochester.
There you go.
So as you alluded to there, you've seen quite a lot in your time, multiple coaches, hundreds of QBs, multiple scandals, from Ricky retiring to Miami passing on Breeze, Saban leaving to Alabama after you got him to say he was staying, Bullygate, Chris Forrester's snowstorm, and Lawrence Timmons missing the Chargers game to go back to Pittsburgh to be with his old teammates. Of all those, and of course, any that we possibly missed, which one shocked you the most, and what were your thoughts when it happened?
Well, when you bring up the list of shocking, anytime you can put in a Las Vegas model cocaine sniffed by an NFL coach in the offices, I mean, I don't think you could top that as far as shock value. It's just been, you know, Bullygate. You know, I really think there were a lot of mistakes made in the investigation of Bullygate and the conclusions made of Bullygate. But that was the Chris Forrester episode is number one. Bullygate, not from an individual standpoint, but from an organizational standpoint, was shocking. And unfortunately, the shocking things for the Dolphins really in the last couple decades have been embarrassments to the franchise.
Mm-hmm. I do have to inquire just a little bit more about the Nick Saban one. So after that transpired, what were the thoughts that went through your head when it came out that he was leaving?
Boy, was I wrong. Because let's back up. And when I asked the question, he was hemming and hawing and dancing. And I did have the thought, oh, he must be going, because otherwise, why would he be dancing like this? But I was also thinking, why didn't he just, if he's staying, why is he like beating around the bush? That's why I asked the question. I actually, in some sense, thought I was helping him say what he wanted to say. And he wasn't, you know, because, you know, covering Saban actually was a really interesting and fascinating. You talk to any of the writers who were there, and everybody liked to cover Saban. And that's one of the great misnomers or mistakes about him, is people think, oh, he hates the media. And maybe he does hate the media, but from a coverage standpoint, he'd give you interesting things to write about. And he'd say interesting things. He had interesting thoughts, a developed philosophy, not just of football, but how he saw life and his role in it. And he was a fascinating guy to cover. So in some bizarre sense, I thought, I'm going to help him out, and why don't you just say it, which is what the question was. It wasn't like I knew I was pinning him, but I thought, I didn't think, it'd be pinning him for all these years later, it's still being brought up. And boy, there was after that press conference, there was a lot of tempers being blown about that question from inside the, you can't hold him to that. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, he really must be going.
I still can't talk about Nick Saban, you know, without getting mad, but I do like a comeback story, and we do have to give a little respect to Chris Forster. Despite the blizzard, he redeemed himself. He got back. He got hired today, I believe, as the offensive line coach of the San Francisco 49ers from assistant. So, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah, and he was with, I believe, Tampa Bay last year in a more of a voluntary role. Look, I got nothing against him. It was, but from you're talking embarrassments. The added embarrassment, he was Adam Gase's most trusted assistant. he was really his lieutenant. You know, the guy that he went to, and so the fact Adam didn't see it, you know, how could anybody else see it?
I'm going to interject one little second before we move on to the format, since Adam Gase was mentioned. Dave, if you don't know, I'm a New Yorker, so I'm one of those different kind of Dolphin fans, you know. So everyone in New York now who thought that Adam Gase was the worst coach in the world, now, of course, he's the best coach in the world. So when I hear that, I rest my case. We can continue.
It's funny, we talked about that season. We got the Forrester, we got the Lawrence Timmons. We didn't even touch on Ray Maluga. I think he punched a cop and then came straight to practice from the bar.
That was sort of the expected one, because he came in with the reputation of, oh, he's a wild liver, you know, and you better keep him under control. It was the other ones that were, I mean, Lawrence Simmons. How many years did he play in Pittsburgh without a incident? And all of a sudden, before his first game with the Dolphins, and I was like, oh my God, what else can go wrong? You know, and the fact they were in Los Angeles at the time because of the hurricane here only added to the whole bizarre element to everything.
It was just wild. So, Dave, I'm also a big fan. You do a show with Omar Kelly, X's and Omar's. I have to ask, in the history of that show, have you and Omar agreed on anything?
I'm sure we have, but you're right. It does seem like we can look at the same game and the same situation and have at times diametrically opposed. We can see diametrically opposed things. And that's sort of fun. Look, I love working with Omar. He's got great passion for the job, but you're right. Now that I think about it, I have come around a little. He's always loving the offensive line. And just as I was coming around to the offense, look, we got to invest in the offensive line. I'm done saying don't spend high draft picks because we've tried the other way. Just get an offensive line built. Just as I was doing that, Omar was going the other way, where we can find it. We can find an offensive line. So it's like you're right. We just seem to, you know, go in opposite directions of each other.
No, and I love Omar. He always has some great takes, but I think Joe Rose completely agrees with you. He says that, you know, Omar, we're watching the same game and we're just seeing the absolute opposite of each other.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting Omar at training camp last year, day one of training camp. And, you know, to Omar's credit, it was like a week after we had like a nice back and forth on Twitter, which was a definite good debate, but we were definitely on other sides of the spectrum. You know, took the time to talk with me for a couple of minutes, gave me one of the greatest tips that I've ever had as a writer. And I will always appreciate that from Omar. So great guy.
What was the tip? Let's do the tip.
The tip was basically kind of talk. I mean, I'll say it. I'll pay it forward. He basically said, talk out what you write and listen back. So basically, you know, rehearse it, say it, record it, listen to yourself, and then filter it into your writing. And I literally cut off hundreds of words, and he basically said 800 words. And 1,000 is too much. And those were the tips.
Here's my tip for writing. Very simple. And it's amazing how many times I haven't followed it. Imagine coming home after you're covering something, and somebody says, oh, what happened? And you tell the most interesting thing that happened. A lot of times that won't be the lead of your story, or sometimes it's not even mentioned, because it's just, you don't think it fits or whatever, but go with your gut and use that. So there you go.
I appreciate that. That is noted.
Mm-hmm. So Dave, before we jump into training camp and the current team, the Dolphin family endured an enormous loss with the passing of Don Shula this year. So whenever we've had a couple former players that played under him and journalists who covered him on the show, we always like to ask for a memory or a story. Do you have one?
I got a lot.
Well, could you share your favorite?
Three decades from the first time I sat down. Look, you know, he was the easiest guy to cover and the toughest guy to cover. The easiest from the standpoint, I remember walking with him after lunch, where he'd sit with the writers and answer questions at lunch. Then you could walk with him across the parking lot at the old St. Thomas University, where the Dolphins facilities were. And if you could walk with him to his office and ask questions. And if he had time, he'd invite you in his office. At the other times, you'd get a thunderstorm if you wrote something he didn't like, or and that was part. He was great. I'll always remember after Dorothy died, I covered the funeral and didn't see him for a couple months. And it was actually at the draft when I saw him next. And PR guy Harvey Green comes up to me and said, "Hey, coach wants to see you." And I was like, "Oh God, what have I written?" Because usually, they don't want to see you. They want to see you to, what the hell were you writing? So, and Harvey even said, what have you written lately? And I go, I don't know. So I'm walking and I turn the corner and there he is. And he goes, hey, I just wanted to tell you thanks for what you wrote about Dorothy. And there was this odd pause because I was expecting to get reamed out, you know. And then he slapped me on the butt like I was a player. And he goes, good job. So there was that. Probably the fun in most recent years was I went to Gulfstream. Shula and Bob Greasy, imagine this, a coach and the quarterback, 50 years later, they'd meet at Gulfstream and have lunch once a month and bet on horses, you know, $5, $10 bets, and tell old stories and keep up with their children and grandchildren and you know, all afternoon. So I sat there for, it was like four hours. And Shula kept repeating the same awful joke. In fact, Greasy would say, "Don, you need a new joke book." You know, that was part of it. But then Shula would do, he must have done this 10 times. He goes, "Read between the lines." So he'd have a lot of old vaudeville jokes. So, you know, we had our ups and downs, but man, what an icon in South Florida and in the NFL.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I mentioned all the time, you know, being that New York Dolphin fan, you know, 1990 was the year that I kind of invented football in my life. You know, I'm 39 years old, so I'm about 9-10 years old at the time. And then you see Marino 4 or 5 times a year, and then you see Shula. And then for me, and I know you're the preeminent 1972 expert, so for a New Yorker growing up watching Shula, then maybe the next day I'm changing channels and there's American Gladiators, Larry Zonka. You just get educated just every minute. So hearing a Shula story, hearing that outside of football is always really cool to me, which leads me to my next question about your coverage of the Dolphins. I feel like it's an organization, regardless of the post-Marino or the post-Shula, whatever you want to call it, just not getting to where we all want to be. We're a franchise of memories, of moments, you know, the Miami Miracle, obviously, even the Mountaineer shot. Save those two. Was there any moment that you were covering that was just an out-of-your-mind, unbelievable moment, whether it's good or bad, that will always stick out in your mind? And obviously, the Miracle probably just is right there. But yeah, if you can give that's easy. If it's just untouchable, fine.
Yeah, you know, that one... because it was such a dreary year, and to have that play, you know, it is like, wow, it was like magic. And I'm thinking as a writer, it's like, oh my God, what a fun story to write about. So there was that. But you're right. There have been little flashes of fun as opposed to, you know, and it's always interesting to me being down here all this time, and the Dolphins are the most red team, them and the Heat, but the Heat have had success. I mean, they've had 3 championships and the Big Three, and while they've, you know, gone down as far as they ever go in the last few years, they're back in the playoffs this year, and so, but the Heat are, or excuse me, the Dolphins are like hibernating, you know, and everybody.
They were hibernating. We're coming back now.
Yeah, right. Maybe. Let's hope so. Let's hope
sleeping
so.
Sleeping giant.
As a writer. But you're right. There, you know, I just have flashes of fun in the last 15 years with them, really, as opposed to anything where I thought was really going to go somewhere.
Could you take us to the – I mean, look, we'll talk about the Miracle for another second. I know there's rules in press boxes not to root, not to do things, not to – what was the atmosphere in the press box when the Miracle was happening, when it was about to happen, and when Gronk missed the angle and Kenyon crossed the goal line?
Yeah, I think, you know, that happened so quick. You have to think what's going through in the press box. We're gathering at that point. If
right.
People had left the press box
going
to get
upstairs.
The elevator to go downstairs, I was starting to gather up my stuff and walking. And, you know, you've seen it 100 times, a lateral or a throw. Okay. So it wasn't really until the last one where Kenyon Drake got the ball, and all of a sudden you saw a lane where that, oh, then it was like a noise, oh, of surprise, like anywhere else. I mean, just shock that, oh, my God, they could score. And then when they did, it was, you know, it was stunning. It still is stunning. Unfortunately, that's like it's one day. You know, the other fun story to me last year, and it really was fun, it was the last game in New England, you know, where Ryan Fitzpatrick, they went 75 yards. What I think he was 9 of 11, something like that, in that series. And it was such a strange post-game locker room in that the players are excited. They won. You know, it was a stunning victory to beat the Patriots in New England when the Patriots wanted the game. They wanted home. If they win that game, they have home field for the playoffs. And it meant nothing to the Dolphins, and yet the Dolphins win. And yet, you saw a sense of inside the franchise of split. Was that a good thing we win or a bad thing? Because remember that. If they had lost to Cincinnati in overtime, and they very well could have, and lose at New England as they should have, they had the number one pick in the draft. And nobody knew they would get Tua at the time. Everybody was thinking, you know, you could get Joe Burrow with the number one pick. So there were, trust me, there were conflicting emotions after the New England game. Nobody quite knew. The players knew how to react. The coaches knew how to react. Not everybody else did.
Well, I think that there was a time in the year, and that's just great insight, Dave, on that stuff. Just, you know, you want to just put yourself into that moment. as a Dolphin fan, you know, and just thinking about looking at future prospects. You know, you mentioned obviously Tua, the great wide receivers. I love comparables. I love looking back to my heyday as a Dolphin fan, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, so I look at a wide receiver like maybe a Preston Williams, and I'm trying to say, maybe not just in that time frame, but who could you compare a Preston Williams to? For you can go as far back as to your first year covering the Dolphins or even your knowledge of the 72 team. Does anybody or any compilation of players mix in to say Preston Williams is this kind of comparable for a Dolphin receiver?
You know, I don't, as far as rawness, there is a comparable, but not as far as who he is, style and size. Okay. You know, in fact, just the opposite. Mark Duper, when he came, remember, but Mark Duper was a second-round pick, too. He hardly played his first year. He grew up, I think he played six-man football in Louisiana. He was a track guy at Northwest Louisiana, or State, I believe, is where he went to college. So he was a sprinter more than a football player. He was so raw. And Shula told him, learn the first year. Now, nobody knew that. All everybody saw was this guy not doing anything. Now, Preston, he did a lot, okay? But as far as rawness, remember his first play? Remember the first play last year? Ryan
yeah.
calls a simple audible because he sees one-on-one. And the rookie in his first game, his mind is just so in awe. He just missed the whole call, blew the play. So there was a rawness there. But you saw him preseason, he could be good. You know, as far as who he could be, you know, and again, Brandon Marshall is so much better. But as far as size and a guy who will go up and get the ball and physicality, if he could get close to that, I think he'd be happy.
I love it. I was going to say, and you said Brandon Marshall, kind of that hybrid of Brandon Marshall and Chris Chambers. So I got to tell you, if we're close to Brandon Marshall, I know those guys worked out together last year. That would be fantastic. And I want to get to my esteemed colleagues, and I know we're going to segue into current Dolphin talk. So, Savak, I know you're on the docket for your next couple of questions for current Dolphin stuff for Dave.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you saw Tua did his presser today, and recently we saw the trailer for his documentary coming out in September, and he's really looking the part of the star QB the franchise has longed for since Danny hung him up. So we're all up north. Well, I'm a quick five-hour drive up 95. These guys are in damn near Canada, but how bright is the star shining down there in Miami?
Well, it, as far as the hope that the star shines huge, and look, the whole focus of the franchise is on him, right? Mm-hmm. Fans, media, columnists like me. I just wrote a column yesterday about he's the only lefty in the league, and you know, why is that? What does it mean? But you know, I hesitate from inflating anymore until we at least see him on the field. Can he get on the field? And by mid-August, you would start to look when Marino, and I hate to do this to Tua, okay? Mm-hmm. Marino, his first training camp, it was obvious. It was, you know, David Woodley would throw, and I wasn't there, so I'm just repeating stories. David Woodley would throw, and then Marino would throw. And it was like stunning that this guy out of no, you know, low pick, he just fell into the Dolphins' lap, but everybody knew he was a star. I would hope everybody watching Tua knows from the start he's a star. Maybe not ready to go in there right away. You know, Marino start his sixth game. Maybe, and this is a weird year. Maybe it's late in the season before you see him. I don't know. But I would hope there will be flashes of something that say that's the guy they got to get to regularly, and he can be a star in this league.
So speaking of that, knowing early, we finally get pads coming on next week in training camp, and media will finally be allowed to observe some of that. Can you walk us through what that's going to look like for you and for the other media? About what kind of access you'll have when the pads come on?
Yeah, I think, as I understand it, after you're tested, which all the media will be tested too, at different levels, some are every day and some are I'm not a beat writer. I don't go out there every day, but there are different levels of testing. And then it'll be a normal, watching a normal practice. Now, what isn't normal for us, and what's crushing to me and in my business, is there's not access to the players. You know, there's, and I get it. I'm not pretending to ignore what's going on in the world, but you know, it has to be done by Zoom. It has to be done, virtually, as opposed to, you used to be able to, on a normal year, after a practice, you talk to 6-8 people if you wanted to, and you get a much better sense of what's going on in the team and all that. But as far as watching a practice, I think you're going to be watching a normal practice. Now, I'm curious, teams have to shrink the playbook this year, especially at the start, just because they had no offseason. They have very limited, practice with pads or practices, period. And so I'm sure the playbooks are shrinking. And the teams that come back with lineups intact, the Dolphins aren't one of these teams, are going to have a great advantage, especially at the start. So it's going to be a weird year, I think.
You think they'll shrink a lot of reps too, where you normally have a lot more than just a few weeks of practice and you have the preseason games? So it's easier to get the full 80 guys, like the full looks. Do you think you'll see like Austin Jackson getting a lot more reps just because there's going to be so few compared to normal?
I would hope so. Remember, I would hope that would have been the case if they had a normal one even, because remember, Richmond Webb played, when he went into left tackle, he played all the time. And so you condense it down to, what are we down to? Let me look at the calendar here. What, 3-4 weeks really and that's even game week almost at this point. So, I mean, I don't know how they're going to get, they got a ton of rookies. I don't know how they're going to get them. Shula's line was, football without pads is tennis without a racket. and so they haven't even had a chance to play actual football with these guys yet to know what they got in them. And in a few weeks, they're going to line up. And look, they do it in college, so it shouldn't be, let's not make too much of it. But at the same time, I think we're going to have to withhold even more than usual reservation, withhold any conclusions or possibilities of what they got for the first several weeks of the season.
So I guess I was kind of expanding on that and the coaching staff. Last year, Coach Flores managed to win 5 games with a roster that was essentially made up of future janitors, fry cooks, and footlocker managers. But despite the losing record, there's just a different feel than we've had with past regimes of, say, Gase and Philbin. In your opinion, what sets this coaching staff apart from them?
Again, I'm going to withhold until we get through the second season. The second season has been the trouble spot for all. I remember Gase after his first year, went to the playoffs, they got Boy Wonder here, and he fell flat in his start from his second to his fourth year. Tony Sperano, his first year, they went to the playoffs. It was a great, and I loved Tony. I thought Tony would have had a chance, really, if he would have found a quarterback. Or Chad Pennington had stayed healthy for another year. But Brian Flores has made a lot of changes. Offensive coordinator change, defensive coordinator change, a lot of coaching changes. Very bold, and he knows what he wants. Now we're going to see if it's right, okay? I really think he's an interesting coach, an interesting person. To me, he's the best story in the NFL about where he came from in the Brooklyn Projects and what he's overcome in his life to reach this point without playing in the NFL. To get where he would have at age 30, in his late 30s, would, you at least got to play in the NFL, but tells you people see him as a special coach. Now, this can be a difficult year for a lot of reasons, but I'm going to withhold, you know, conclusions of, boy, this is something special here until we get through this season.
Quick follow-up on Flores. I'm sorry, Jason. Quick follow-up on Flores. Do we know if the TNT wall is back in effect on the field?
You know what? I don't – you know, it's such bizarre. That would be such a simple question in a normal year. I don't know. And I, you know, watching the video they've released from the practices, I haven't – I don't think it's come into play as far visually where it would have been there or wouldn't have been there. So I don't know.
It was a sight to behold last year. I mean, it was literally beautiful. And I think it resonates with, you know, you mentioned – Flores and his story, I agree with you. And, you know, again, you know, being from New York, both my parents taught in the borough over in Queens, probably 12 minutes from, you know, they sat in South Ozone Park. So they, you know, I know the story, I know the upbringing, and, you know, it's always great to root for another New Yorker down in South Florida. So now combining the coaching staff, the scouting, analyzing what they need to do with, of course, COVID. You have an Alan Hearns opting out. You have an Albert Wilson opting out. What players do for their families is their business. That's, of course, you know, a topic that I don't think many people understand. These are human beings. They're employees of an organization. If they need to do what's best for their family, that's what they need to do. As a football organization, there's a number three receiver battle. There's a slot receiver battle. How do you see that competition heating up?
Well, I don't see it right now is the problem. It's so hard. They brought in two new guys I don't really know much about other than statistically and what their, you know, the internet scouting reports say. So until, you know, the interesting thing to me last year with Devontae Parker, all through the Gaze regime, and he was right in this, Devontae Parker could not read defenses to run and to make the adjustments they wanted in that offense to run proper patterns to where he was trusted. So they would give him one read and he'd do that. Whereas Fitzpatrick, so he come into this year and after 4 years, I think you probably got a read on, we all did thought we had a read on Devontae Parker. And yet, you put him in a different offense where go out there, find an open spot, you know, and it was without these great reads, great involved patterns, and Fitzpatrick trusted him enough to throw it up there and he's going to get it. And so, you know, we can look at this numbers and statistics of all these guys and think this guy goes there and this guy goes there, you know, and I'm sure, you know, I could come up with some answers, but I need to see these guys on the field to see how they're going to work with Fitzpatrick or Tua or the quarterbacks. The other thing is Chan Gailey. I need to see what he's running. I saw it 20 years ago when he was with the Dolphins. I saw it obviously with the Jets and Buffalo, but you know, there's going to be some adjustments in all of this. So they have some interesting talent, but you're right, in the slot especially, it's a little lost now. Now, you know, do they move some people inside? I'm curious to see what they're going to do, because that the slot receiver is and the tight end are going to be two interesting changes maybe for how Chan's going to use them or what he's going to. We know what Demonte could do now. We know how to use him. You know, you think Preston will be in the same idea, right? So I'm curious to see how some of these other pieces line up with this offense.
Now, last year, of course, both units, the offense and the defense, ranked among the NFL's worst. I know we're still dealing in hypotheticals and not being able to actually see anything. It's hard to give an estimate, but which unit do you think will take the biggest step forward?
Well, the defense by far better. I mean, the defense is paid to do that. They went out and they bought a defense. Okay. You bought in Byron Jones, you bought the highest paid defensive back, Kyle Van Noy, you bought a season, then a guy who knows this defense. okay? They troll the waters for defensive ends and hope they're going to get somebody who you know, has a better year here than they did there. And I think that's a smart way to do it. And I like some of those pieces. They still don't have they need Christian Wilkins really to take a step forward this year. And if he's going to do, you know, year one to year two, that's a tough position for a rookie to come in and play. Year two, you'll have a better feel for what to do. But yeah, the defense should win them some games this year. The offense is really going to be a work in progress. Look at that offensive line. Tell me who's going to start and where and win big prizes right now. Because, I saw Robert Hunt was lining up at left tackle and with a picture the Dolphins sent out. Now, whether that was just for fun, I assume, just for cross-training, I assume. But, you know, that raises eyebrows when you have such limited viewing. So they got a lot of work on the offense. The defense really should come in and win some games.
All right. So I guess building off of that, what do you think the ceiling is for the defense?
Well, the ceiling would be top 10 defense. Now, can it get there? I hesitate. I need to see what they're going to do against the run. Because if you're Bill Belichick, if you're Buffalo, you're going to power the Dolphins until they tell you they've developed that ability to stop people. Because you see what they have in the back end. They have two shutdown cornerbacks, assuming everybody's healthy. They have some athletic and good linebackers now. They have some pass rush as opposed to really last year when they had to just try to manufacture it. But the question to me still is right up the middle. Do they have enough heft at defensive tackle? Do they have the middle linebacker who can stop the run? So I'm curious. That's going to be the number one test for me with the defense.
What position battle is the most intriguing for you as next week when you get to start seeing this? Which one are you really got your eye on to see who's going to step up and take over?
Yeah, to me, it's all across the offensive line because I'm curious, A, where the coaches are going to decide to play people. They're not going to be able to – there is going to be some cross-training because that has to happen, especially – you look at worst case scenario in this COVID, if you lose three offensive linemen for a game or four? So there's going to be cross training, but where they're going to line up, I'm just curious of where everybody and then who's going to win out. You know, Michael Dieter was a disappointment last year. Okay. Now he comes to year two. They're ready to move on without him. Does he have anything to show, in year two? I'm curious to see, up and down the offensive line is really where I'm going to be looking at things. And let's face it, quarterback too, because of Tua. I mean, I expect him to win that job at some point this year. Otherwise, I'm going to, if it's a health reason, that's one thing. But if it's just simply he hasn't shown enough, then I think maybe you have to reevaluate a little of maybe he's not everything they expected when they got him with the fifth pick.
So speaking of that, that leads perfectly into that. At first I kind of thought, maybe a red shirt, maybe we wait like 12 games. But really looking back at last year, it made more sense, I think, to play Rosen than it did for Fitzpatrick. But what it came down to was Fitzpatrick gave the Dolphins the better chance to win. And Flores has just proven – whoever's going to be who's giving us the best chance to win, he's going out there. So do you see that's how he's going to handle Tua this year once he sees that's the best guy in practice, that's who's going out there?
Everything Brian Flores has showed us is he's out to win on Sunday. He's not going to look to next year. He's not going to look too far down the line. He is going to put whoever he thinks can win for him. And, there's great purity in that if you're a player in that. I was calling for Rosen to start last year because I knew what last year was about. They won five games. Big deal. It was a great accomplishment, but big deal. What, that gets them nowhere. So my thought was play Rosen And yet, I got what Flores is doing. If he plays Rosen and everybody's watched Fitzpatrick play better in practice, what's he telling the rest of the team? So I get it. I get it. I think whoever – if there is a point where Tua – and there should be – where Tua is better than Fitzpatrick, gives him a better chance to win, then he's going to throw him out there.
And quick follow-up, too, on that. We're very familiar with Adam Gase. And just trading Jamal Adams, how does he go – that same mentality, how does he go in that locker room and try to convince these guys – we're trying to win when we just got rid of our best player and our leader, our best player. How can he even do that?
Now, if you're Bill Belichick, you can do that because you have the rings behind you and you've done it many times. You've got rid of a great player and got for whatever reason. But you know, Adam had the same issue here. He had no, now Jamal Adams won a new contract. Okay, and this was his way to get it. Okay, I get that from that standpoint. But all the old issues with Gase popped up again. Communication, confrontation with players. You know, confrontation as an NFL coach is a way of life. You have to talk to the players. And then Jamal Adams, and I'm watching from afar, so I don't know, you know, the day-to-day what was going on, but I have a general idea what happened. And it reminded me of Rashad Jones, where Rashad Jones was taken out as parts of the defense, and yet Adam Gase never talked to him about it. And he left it to the defensive coordinator. Look, if you have an all-pro, a Pro Bowl player, a star, one of the veterans, you better, as a head coach, go talk to him and confront him and make sure everything's okay. And I got the same sense of that with Jamal Adams. Now, maybe it would have played out the same way because, again, Adams wanted the contract, and he's going to get it. You know, Adam wants to be an offensive coordinator, but be called the head coach.
And he's got this aversion to safeties that I just don't understand. But this is too much on Adam Gase. I gotta leave it. But Gase talk aside, and of course it's always fun to talk Adam Gase. But the last question really for you, Dave, is really to kind of wrap up all the current talk that we've talked about and just say, does this team have a shot this year? Are the playoffs in sight? Or where are we standing here optimism-wise?
Wow, I am so scarred. I am so scarred by these last 4 years. And I hear, you know, I saw Omar Road. Don't, you know, about these high expectations. And I was like, Omar, are there high expectations? Is everybody, and I didn't really, you know, I'm in my own world of looking at the team, what they've done. I don't have high expectations for this team, okay? I don't have playoff aspirations for this team. If you look at the defense, I would say, okay, sure. Then I turn around, I look at the offense where I don't know who's going to play on the offensive line, much less they haven't played together. I don't know what they have at some other positions, and I'm still expecting a change of quarterback at some point. In a normal world, I would have no expectations as far as the playoffs with this team. The only thing that would give me some pause is what the Jets have done and the way the Patriots have just been. And I hate to say this because it seems like every year there's some reason to count out the Patriots, but they've really been decimated from what they could have been by players opting out. And so, you know, there's a window there. I'm not expecting the Dolphins really to grab it though.
That makes sense. And, just wanted to again, thank you very much, Dave. I'm going to swing it, obviously, back to our fearless leader.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good fun talking with everybody. Stay safe.
Dave, thank you so much. And don't forget, go follow Dave Hyde Sports on Twitter. Subscribe to the Sun Sentinel. They have a digital subscription. We can read all his columns. They're amazing. And check out the podcast and the video, the show, X's and Omar's. Dave, thanks again. It was an honor to have you join us.
All right, Brian. Take care. See you guys.
Fins up, guys. Yeah.